Okay, I'll start by thanking the organisers and then follow straight away up with a confession that I'm, you know, a bit of an outsider really in some ways. I'm not an algebraic combinatorics background person, but much more somebody numerical analysis, design of computational methods. So we're really wanting to use these in other procedures for solving a whole range of problems from geomathematics problems through. So start off here, there's sort of almost it was to be something that see if you recognize some of these patterns. There's three distributions there, all with the same number of points. I think it was 546. There's some writing on the top, which is deliberately supposed to be small enough that you can't read it. So don't try and squeeze it out. It's supposed to be that I can actually read it to remind me which one is which. But, I mean, if you have played around with these sorts of things, you might or might not be able to guess what the sort of backgrounds are of them. And, I mean, this one on the left is actually the one with, well, I guess the first thing, they obviously all have reasonably regular structure. There's no obvious holes or close things together, so they're reasonable. This one is a minimum, well, at least close, very close to the global minimum energy problem for that number of points. So there's all the issues to do with trying to find it with local minima versus global minima, but you get a very nice regular pattern with the, lots of the hexagonal structure that we've heard talked about. That one is actually one slight tweaked version of generalized spiral points, which have been around for quite a few years. I don't know who was the original generator of those, but the contrast there is that they're trivial to generate. And they can very quickly give you something that's actually very reasonable to tweak. And that one is something that I'm very confident is within a tiny amount of a genuine spherical design. I can't actually remember the degree for that. And probably you'd see that that one's just slightly less regular. But what we want to be is, I mean, we want to actually not just have one of these or concentrate on particular numbers of points or concentrate on particular degrees. That's probably fine because I don't think I'm going to write on the blackboard. But actually, we would really like a sequence of these things. So we would like a sequence of degrees T so that we can look at the convergence as we embed them in some sort of approximation scheme or some sort of numerical integration. And so that's what we'd like, not just specific values, but something that worked for a whole range of T, but the number of points correlates to amount of work, and so that's also an issue for us. So to start off with is just some very simple background, starting off in S2, although it all can be done in SD. So there's some things, some spherical designs, some characterizations, very simple-minded sort of looking at it in S2, because you'll see the reflection of that structure when we come to the approximate spherical designs. Okay, so start off with just standard S2 in R3 with standard Euclidean inner product, and just purely notational-wise, because I'll flip between these different things, and curly Xn would be my set of endpoints. And so you'll see at various stages things like the dimension of the polynomial space will come up as a key parameter. And it's been around for ages that there's various ways of characterizing it, but the original definition is that if you integrate the polynomial and you can do it exactly by just sampling at these particular nodes. There's an alternative way from the numerical cubiture, quadrature community, it's just an equal weight quadrature rule with degree of precision T. So the terminology degree of precision T just meaning it's exact for all spherical polynomials of degree up to T. And in general, we wouldn't necessarily be worried about the weights being equal. It is critically important in a number of theoretical results that the weights are positive. Right, because Marcinkiewicz-Zsigmond sort of results and things like that come from having a degree of precision plus positivity of the weights. But there are other particular applications when having equality of the weights just means you can flip things around and do things more efficiently, and so we are particularly interested in those. Okay, so I mean a little bit of background. It's well known lower bounds on those. The only thing that's sort of here is that roughly it's t squared on 4, and the nice sort of results that you can't actually achieve that except in some nice special cases. And one of the things that's actually been sort of, you know, annoying for a while is the knowing that for all values of t that there exists spherical designs with n is equal to some sensible power. If they're large enough, then it's been known that they exist. So if you have enough points for a particular value of t, that's fine. But we would in particular like, I knew I'd do things like this. I was starting off in t and then I go and slip in something here for the sphere SD, right? So if you mysteriously see a d appearing, just think of it transferring to the sphere SD. So we would like order t squared points. In particular, we might like, we were interested in the class with t plus 1 squared, but then we could do things like both interpolation and curvature on the same set of nodes. But it wasn't known that existence held for all values of t. And there is a recent report of the archive in 2010 by Bondarenko and co-authors claiming to have shown that asymptotically that it's okay for t to the power d for the sphere SD. There's no estimate there on the constant, and of course when we'd like to economize on the number of points we'd like a sensible or as low as possible constant, but no for S2 that we can't hope to get down as low as t squared on 4. Okay, so this is just a little bit more background. One of the things that you can, of course, do is tensor product constructions, and there's certainly been some tensor products which use order t cubed points that have been around for quite some time. But I mean, there's something sort of interesting background there is that they're, you know, t designs, so equal weight curvature rule for the interval minus 1 to 1 is something that's sort of unnatural in some sense. There's very nice all sorts of things about curvature for the interval minus 1 to 1, but without the constraint of equality of the weights. And when you impose that, you're actually putting a significant extra constraint even on the interval. And so if you're going through the tensor product sort of thing, then you do end up with the t cubed, which is higher than we'd certainly like. Okay, there's lots of these available from the Hardin and Sloan. I should say a lot of this work is in conjunction with Ian Sloan. Ian Sloan is no E on the end and totally different and independent to Neil Sloan, which is, we've even had references where people have quoted the wrong person in papers for that. So they have a conjecture that it's t squared on 2, which we would strongly support, as you'll see later on with that. And in particular, we started off with this in terms of looking at this particular number where the determined by the dimension of the polynomial space for S2. And initially, we were trying to get things which actually would be the best for interpolation and things. So we were looking at maximizing the determinant of the interpolation matrix, or effectively the condition number as well, and there's various constraints with that. But when you actually look at it, I mean, if you've got this number of points, you've actually got a lot of degrees of freedom. Now, with these maximum determinant, there's an issue to do with the weights. They're well defined, but there is actually still no proof that you automatically get positive weights when you do this. In practice, you do up to sort of very high degrees, or 165 sort of degrees. But there's actually a fair degree of flexibility. There's when you're dealing with that number of points. And so you can actually think of doing other things, or you can think of trying to make the weights more equal. And certainly it's very easy to find spherical designs starting from these, because in practice they're something which has got positive weights very close to being equal, but not actually equal. Close being something you need to define a bit more carefully, but they're good starting points for doing this. But you've got lots of degrees of freedom and you can actually do other things. And so there was various attempts to use interval methods or proofs along those lines to try and show that you're guaranteed to have a spherical design at least close by into to one that you found numerically. And then the latter stuff was actually even saying, okay, once we've got these, we can actually optimize something else and get well-conditioned spherical designs. But we're still, I mean, there's still a little bit of drawback, which, you know, you pay for in terms of our thing, in terms of extra effort in having t plus 1 squared points. So we'd like to be a little bit better. So just to remind you of some of the basic characterizations, there are lots of different characterizations, but there's one I want to particularly look at because you'll see that it comes into how we interpret approximate spherical designs. So the standard sort of thing is we're looking at these sums of the YLKs are the standard orthonormal basis of spherical harmonics, and we're just looking at the Bale sums summed over all the different points in it. And as long as we exclude the little l equals zero, the constant term, from there, then they have to just integrate to zero, because that's the exact integral over the sphere. So you've got a bunch of conditions there, and there's various ways of turning those into different criteria that characterize a spherical design. It's critical, of course, that the L equals zero term is not included. Okay, so what, I mean, we'll look at is something where we take any strictly positive combination of the Legendre polynomials. If you're in higher dimensions, then you can change that and put in the appropriate Gegenbauer or ultra-spherical polynomial. That's not so much an issue. I've just done it here for S2 with the specific case of the Legendre ones. But we want to actually have this sort of generality with the ATL here, which actually can depend, change with the dimension T as we're going along, and of course changes with degree, but we want it to be strictly positive. And there's normalizations associated with the Legendre polynomial. And then what we're looking at is, by using this as the basic thing, as just taking some, summing up all of these at all the different pairs of points, and here we, it's not like the energy where we have to exclude an xi equals xj, so we've got all of them in there, and then just normalizing with the n squared. And it will depend on the choice of the particular function psi here, which of course depends on the particular choice of these coefficients. We'll see later on that they're actually going to come out again as the coefficients that define an inner product in a Sobolev space, which is where they'll reappear. Okay, so if you look at that, there's some basic results that you can define, and this is a very crowded slide, but the fundamental thing here is that that criteria is always greater than or equal to zero for any possible choice of your point set, with the points being on the sphere. And moreover, because we're actually, we want to get some idea of the scale of these things, right? So we're not interested, well, of course we're interested in non-negativity and we're interested in when we're zero, but we also want to have some idea of what's going on in terms of the scale of them. So you can also get an upper bound on these, right? So the upper bound actually comes when all the points coalesce together, and you'll get the sum of all these coefficients in the Legendre or the ultraspherical expansion, I think. And that will also, of course, just be the value because of the normalization we've put on those of the psi t's at 1. Moreover, you've got a minimum and a maximum, but you can also relatively easily calculate an average. So to have some idea of what's going on, the A bar is the average value when we essentially integrate out over all the possible choices of the points normalized by the surface area measure, and you can see that that actually comes out to be psi t evaluated at 1 divided by n. So what you've got here is something that ranges between 0 and this psi t of 1 and has an average value of psi t 1 over n. So it gives you some more information about the scale of what's going on with these criteria. And the thing that everybody's used is that you have a spherical design if and only if this thing is equal to 0. And that simply comes because you can turn around and express this as a weighted sum of the squares of those Vail sums, which is the characterization of spherical designs. And because we've got all these coefficients here strictly positive, the only way you can make this 0 is to make all the squares equal to 0, and so then you get all those terms individually 0. And that's been around for ages. Okay, so there's no problem if you've got that equal to 0. Well, you might see in practice there may be a problem if you're actually doing it sort of numerically, whether it's equal to 0 or not. But the real issue of this is that if you could actually show that you had a global min and it was strictly positive, then there'd be no spherical T designs with that number of points. But there's always the issue here of being sure that you have a global minimum of that. So that part of it is very much harder than at least this you have some hope of doing it. So just to give you some ideas, here's a couple of concrete examples of ones. So if you take the z to the t plus z to the t minus 1, subtract off that term to get rid of the 0 term, making it so that it is always equal to 0, not equal to some fixed particular value. So I'm taking off a constant term as necessary, then you can know what that is, and then that will give you one particular choice. Okay, Con and Kumar had another one, and there is one that we used that was associated with the Jacobi polynomial, which sort of has a natural expansion where the ATLs are just 2Ls plus 1s, the coefficients there in terms of the expansion. So that's a closed form in terms of the Jacobi polynomials. But I'm not saying that's exclusive, that's just three examples of different ones that fit under this category that actually have all the positive coefficients. You need both the two powers, because you need an odd and an even power to make sure you have a positive coefficient for all the Legendres in the expansion when you do that for the z to the t. Okay, so there's various ways of actually just thinking of that from a numerical point of view. You can actually think of just evaluating a matrix, which is this function, at all the different points. So you get an n by n matrix by evaluating this guy. And you can actually express that in terms of the spherical harmonic basis matrix. So just think of that as the spherical harmonics going, say, down the indexing the rows and the columns being indexed by the points. Then the standard condition about the sum is just given by this number of equations, the minus one because you don't have the constant term, and it's just saying that all the other ones integrate to zero. Exactly. And really what we're doing is putting in a matrix D, a strictly positive definite diagonal matrix with these weights going down the diagonal. The 2L plus 1 comes out from the addition theorem for the spherical harmonics, and so this would actually, we would have that as an extra term in there. It may or may not be cancelled by something that was in the ATL term as well, but as long as they're still positive, They are fixed. They don't change with K. They just change with the degree. So you get this thing with a strip of them, an increasing number as you go down in each of the degrees. But, I mean, in theory, you could put any symmetric positive definite D in there. We're only interested in the diagonal cases that have this particular simple structure. And then there's a different ways of evaluating this guy. You could think of summing up all these different terms, which is summing up all these different expressions across all the different pairs of points, and then the scaling, and that just comes from doing essentially a matrix multiplication. E here is the vector of all ones, but you can also express it in terms of the spherical harmonics, and you can see then that it's just a weighted sum of squares. And that's far preferable when you're trying to do this, and to just illustrate why it's far preferable, if you look at that matrix psi that comes from one particular choice. This is the choice where we chose the ATL to be the 2L plus 1, which gives us a diagonal matrix being the identity matrix. Then you get nice constant values all along the diagonal. And then you get all sorts of, on a much smaller order of magnitude, pluses and minuses. And so what you've got to do and add the whole thing up to get zero is you've got a fixed constant term, you know, from adding up the diagonals, the trace, or the sum of the eigenvalues, that's all predetermined, and you know what that is, and you've got to add up a whole bunch of these positives and negatives to get them to cancel with that exactly, which is just an atrocious mess from a numerical point of view. It's simple, it's trivially parallelized, it's very easy to do, but you lose all sorts of accuracy when you're trying to do it in real computation. So, I mean, we almost always work with this weighted sum of squares type of form. And then for sums of squares, you actually have quite a bit of information. So this is summary from, I don't know what it would be here in the Canada, but sort of a third year undergraduate optimization class in Australia would sort of say, if you're minimizing sums of squares, then you can write down information about the gradient and the Hessian of the sums of squares. And so, I mean, you've got non-linear sums of squares in the statistical context, they're often over-determined, but here, in general, we might be under-determined and have more variables to play with. Okay, so you can get information about the derivatives, and in particular, if you're actually in a situation where you've got the right number of variables and the Jacobian here actually is full rank, so smallest singular value is greater than zero, and you're heading towards a point where the residuals are actually equal to zero, then this gives you a great approximation for the Hessian in the case when you have the full rank. And the full rank condition is something that's definitely not to be ignored in what goes on here. And you can get fast convergence there. Okay, so here is one sort of, this was a very simple-minded sort of calculation. How many parameters do you have and how many equations? We have the dimension of PT. This is just for S2. Take off the constant, because we don't have to set that equal to zero. So I've got T plus 1 squared minus 1 equations. They're the different vial sums that I have to make equal to zero. And the number of variables that I've got, well, once you think about the spherical parameterization of all those points, you've got really 2n variables, but there's a rotational bit. You can always rotate invariance going on there, and you can rotate and get rid of at least 3. So that you've effectively got working with 2n minus 3 variables. So if you just think up of the very simple-minded thing of matching up the number of variables with the number of equations, then you get a threshold. So here was an attempt from a fair while ago of a particular case of 19 of just trying varying T and trying to see how you went at minimizing those sums of squares. And so here, this is the number of points along the axis here. The threshold at the cut over here is 201. And you actually sort of saw that there was something that was, you know, there's different behavior here as the minimum gets smaller and smaller. just before the threshold there's something going on, and you've got a value there which I think is around 10 to the minus 12, and you've got then an interesting question is whether you regard that as genuinely non-zero, or is it something that you just haven't been able to evaluate accurately. But once you get over the threshold, then you actually get everything floating around down round rounding error, and you can do various standard numerical things to verify that, either extended precision or check that you genuinely do have a zero. So once you get over that, you're getting things without trouble. Right around the threshold, things are a bit dicey. But in some ways, we're not interested in totally in just trying to minimize the number of points. We would like to find a threshold where we can say, for that number of points and for any t, we can always find one and just work with that as a sequence of points. If you've been observant, you would have noticed something here, that the critical factor here is it's less than the t plus 1 or the order t squared that comes from the dimension. It's not as low as the t squared over 4, the unachievable lower bound for the tight spherical designs, but is the t squared over 2, the same sort of order of magnitude that the Hardin and the Sloan were proposing. But we haven't imposed any particular symmetry structures at this stage. Okay. One of the things to realize that where you can, you know, just hitting this naively with your favorite optimization technique for least squares can get you into all sorts of trouble. And I realized that I'd left off a title. The one on the right here is actually the singular values at the solution. So this is actually a plot of the function.
What is the M? M is what?
Oh. Sorry. Apologies. That's the smallest one, right? So if you've got the spherical harmonic basis matrix, right, it's got dimension of the polynomial space minus 1 in one side, and it's got capital N being the other. And for this one, the N... Okay. Whoops. Go back. Okay, so it's in with this context here, right? So I'm thinking of M equations and N variables, right? So the number of equations versus the number of variables. The number of equations is coming from that dimension of the polynomial space minus 1, and the number of variables is coming from whatever your parameterization you're working with for the spherical points. Okay, so here we've got one where we're just underdetermined. So you've got more degrees, more variables, better degrees of freedom. But what happens is that you blast down, making different rates of progress, and you basically stall. And the reason is that you get issues to do with a zero or very close to zero singular value. So the spherical harmonic basis matrix is not coming out to be full rank. Yet, if you change and start from other points on the same number of points, same number of variables, you can actually get a global solution. So that's sort of one of the indications that you need to look for, that things are not working well and you need to do something to change it. And so, I mean, there's various ways of trying to think about these things, but as you get down with the sum of squares, if you're doing it in standard double precision computation, you know, you're sort of getting these things down. Now, the scale here is not all that clear, but this is 10 to the minus 17 to the 10 to the minus 13, and that's the spherical design objective. The sum of squares is between 10 to the minus 30 and 10 to the minus 20. And in fact, the sum of squares is in fact a very good way of evaluating that. Just adding up all those numbers on the matrix, you see you get all sorts of different combinations of rounding errors, and in fact some of them can easily go negative due to the rounding error. And there's various other characterizations. So one of the things is, in standard, you know, if you have something which is sum of squares of 10 to the minus 28, do you believe it's genuinely zero? You can try numerical things like extended precision, or you can try interval methods to do it. But in some ways, the thing to look at is how you've converged. If you come in and rapidly converged, then you've got a lot more confidence in it. And so that's when you've got a full rank situation rather than that one on the previous slide. Okay, so most of the time for these cases here, you actually end up with reasonably well-conditioned Jacobians. Right, so that's, remember, the Jacobians are going to be the partial derivatives of the residuals which are coming from the Vale sums with respect to however you've done the parameterization of the points on the sphere. There's a few special cases early on, which is where something, you know, special points for special degrees, where things are singular. Okay, one of the things that we're actually interested in as well is not just the fact that they're equal weight curvature rules, but the geometric distribution qualities of the points. So when we're doing things, especially with interpolation and approximation, the mesh norm is typically the key thing that comes into the quality of the approximation that we need to converge. The separation of the points, which is what Doug Harden talked about with energy, typically affects things like the condition number of the various matrices going on. So if we look at the mesh norm, which to you guys is probably just covering radius, then, I mean, there's various things that we actually know. Because we have degree, if we have a spherical design and we if we have any positive weight curvature rule, which is a degree of precision T, then you can actually know something about the mesh norm. And it's controlled by the largest zero of the appropriate polynomial. For S2, it's the largest zero of the Jacobi polynomial, and there's various asymptotic estimates of that. So when you have positive weights plus degree of precision, polynomial precision, then you do have a reasonable bound on the mesh norm. There's a limit by the best covering. Now, one of the things, you know, sort of we were interested in is what happens if you're just at a stationary point. So instead of, if you have not necessarily a minimum or a global minimum, but if you actually just had a stationary point of that objective. And there's one of the things that we're able to show is that if you have a stationary point of your criteria and you have a mesh norm condition, then the only way that you could have that was that if you actually were at a spherical design. The only trouble is this condition on the mesh norm is overly restrictive and says that you must have sort of n greater than c into t plus 1 squared points where c is greater than 4. And we're really interested in the C is sort of between a half and one sort of territory. The separation is something that with spherical designs you can't really control because you can put together two spherical designs and they're still a spherical design with double the number of points. Rotate half of them arbitrarily and you're still okay. So you can get it with arbitrary separation. So you can't just from the condition of getting a spherical design have anything which guarantees that. Okay. However, the ones that you actually get from solving for when you're just around the threshold of that very simple-minded argument of when the number of variables was greater than the number of equations that you have end up becoming remarkably regular. So the thing that we're actually concerned with the regularity is this mesh ratio. I've put a factor of 2 in here, which was slightly different from Doug's, so it's just the covering radius over the packing radius, which of course is greater than or equal to 1. We want that uniformly bounded, and as low as possible is good. So here is the separation going on, and it's basically going down like pi over t plus 1. Sorry, there's an L there, it should be a T. And here's the mesh norm, which is essentially going down in the same sort of thing with the same factor of the T plus 1. And most of the mesh ratios are just a little bit around 2, up and down and jiggling around, but with absolutely no sign of growth. Okay, so that in that point of view, it is providing us with something that it does satisfy the condition that we have a uniform bound on that. There's no proof yet that for all values of t, there is a solution to that, let alone that the solution will automatically have a uniform bound, and that's the sort of thing that we'd like. Okay, there's been lots of attempts to put in symmetry conditions. We weren't so much interested in putting in very special, like icosahedral, but one thing that is very simple to do and add in is to make them antipodal or symmetric. So always include x and minus x. And then you get the benefit that you get a certain subset of the spherical harmonics automatically integrated exactly. So you get fewer variables and fewer equations to satisfy. It's a strategy, I think, going back to Sobolev. And so you can do that in the same sort of thing. And there, if you do that with the symmetric designs, you get a threshold which is slightly different. It's still got the same leading term, t squared over 2, but a slightly different thing here, which is marginally, and I mean marginally only less than the previous one when you didn't assume symmetry. But it actually makes it easier to calculate. Okay. Well, that was just to, one of the things to verify that everything is okay here is to actually just redo things and evaluate them in quad precision, and that you suddenly see that you're getting down to things well below the rounding error, but what you would expect from quad precision type calculations. So here's the corrupted one in ordinary double precision, and then this is what happens when you evaluate that in quad precision. Okay, and well, a Linux computational cluster optimization is where I come from. I should say, the non-symmetric ones I can give you to degree 155. The symmetric ones to degree 230 odd. I mean that is important to us because it gives us a range, enough of a range of degrees to actually be practical in many applications, right? If you're doing an approximation of some physical phenomena, getting up to degree 230 is getting into the territory where you know. Well, I wouldn't call it a supercomputer, but it's a relatively fancy multi-core processor. Okay, one of the things that's actually an interesting quirk, I mean, even in these, we often have one degree of freedom, which we're just choosing things down around the threshold, so there is still some degrees of freedom. As soon as you've got some degrees of freedom, you can think about, you know, are you at isolated points, or are there manifolds going through there which are spherical designs? And one of the things that we're very interested in is the conditioning of the spherical harmonic basis matrix. And so one of the things we looked at was actually, when we have a degree of freedom, trying to increase the condition number. Now, in fact, you can actually just do it by increasing the sum of the singular values because there's a constraint in the structure of the things here. And just to illustrate, this is essentially a parameterization of the arc over which the spherical design constraint is satisfied, at least to full numerical double precision. And then what's happening, as plotted there, is either the sum of the log of the singular values or the condition number. So, I mean, it's not all that much variation, but you can see it's clearly varying as you're going through this arc of spherical designs when you have some degrees of freedom. And here, it specifically chose one where we only expect to have one degree of freedom. So it gives, if you put in more degrees of freedom, I'm not suggesting you could go as far as the t plus 1 squared, but you could go anywhere in between, and then you could put in what other criteria might be important to you to add to the spherical design. Okay, one of the ways of interpreting this is to think about these quadrature rules in terms of their worst case error. So in general, we could have a quadrature rule with some weights and some nodes, and it's approximating the integral, and I've written this in terms of the general sphere. So this quadrature rule, cubature rule, is approximating that integral, and we're looking at functions embedded in some space. So typically we're dealing with Sobolev spaces, and normally for at least S greater than D over 2. And the worst case cubature error is just simply to take the supremum over all the functions in the Sobolev space, with the norm induced by the Sobolev space being less than or equal to 1, of the magnitude of the cubature error. So as long as you restrict that to be less than or equal to 1, then you've got the largest possible thing here. And that gives us a measure. I mean, you can flip this around, of course, and say, okay, then if you know how this is behaving, then this gives you a norm and you can bring it around the other side, and the error of integration is less than or equal to this times the norm of the function. And if you have a positive weight rule, which of course includes the spherical designs with degree of precision t, then you can get some lower and upper bounds on this. So you can prove that these can't be improved. And if you can think about it, if we're sure that you can always choose n is big O t to the d for SD for your number of points, or in particular the number of points in the spherical design, then the order of the upper and lower bound becomes the same. So you're only then out by a constant factor. Okay, and now that's really what we're sort of wanting to preserve, because this is, I mean, this is a quite general result for positive weight cubature rules. So if we think explicitly now of a sequence of n, where n is a function of t point configurations, and now we think of actually just replacing the general weights by an equal weight, so we're insisting on having equal weights in here. I haven't normalized the surface measure to be 1, but so the weights are given by the surface area divided by the number. The worst case error, supremum over all functions in the Sobolev space, and what we want is this to behave at the right order, right? The 1 over t to the s. Right, which is based on the previous results. And so essentially, anything, any set of points that gets us this is what we're going to regard as an approximate spherical design. So we're characterizing it in terms of the behavior of the worst case error for integration in a Sobolev space. We're actually going to change a little bit with the Sobolev space, is that as well as the parameter S, which has restrictions depending on the dimension, you can put some weights in the inner products that you define with it, which will actually affect the norm as well. And if you put that vector of weights, then you can think of those vectors of weights as being precisely those coefficients that came in the ultraspherical expansion of those criteria for determining a spherical design. So those same sets of weights there. You get different weights for different Sobolev spaces S, and you get a weight for each of the L's. And then you have, and it's critical to all the techniques that we use, a reproducing kernel Hilbert space with reproducing kernel given by this guy here. So these are the general ultraspherical polynomials appropriate to the sphere SD. And then really what we're wanting is these approximate spherical designs and relate it back to this kernel here, and you can take that back there as saying that this kernel, ignoring the constant term, you have to subtract that off, has the right sort of asymptotic behavior as a function of t. Now, you can actually also interpret a lot of this in terms of discrepancy. I haven't actually defined discrepancy. I should go back to here. One of the other things, if you remember when I was looking at these different criteria for variational characterizations of spherical designs, we had lower bound of 0, a maximum, and an average value. One of the things that we can prove is that with this is that they will always be better than average. And in the quasi Monte Carlo community, you know, accepting things that are better than average is often being quite good. Now, I'm not sure whether here it just being better than average is enough, but you could go back and try and define them in terms of those variational characterizations, but it should definitely be taking into account the minimum and the average values as you go along. So here's in fact some examples of the one that comes from the Jacobi polynomial, and using three different point sets. So the one here is max maximum determinant. These are all point sets with t plus 1 squared points. So the blue ones are from maximizing the determinants associated with the basis matrix, the green ones from minimizing energy, and the red ones are coming from the generalized spiral. And the generalized spiral on this are decaying the best of all of those. When we were initially doing this, we were actually, had some vague thoughts that it may be that the minimum energy will provide one of the best criteria for doing this. But it depends how you look at that. The generalized spiral points are trivial to generate, and yet they're getting us really quite reasonable approximate spherical designs. So equal weight curvature rules. They won't be exact, they won't have a polynomial degree of precision, but the worst case error in the appropriate Sobolev space will decay in the right way. Now, in some particular cases, there's natural things associated with different Sobolev spaces. So for d equals 2 and s equals 3/2, you can choose the coefficients that those a's that define the inner product or define the particular variational characterization to be associated with the Cooey and Frieden generalized discrepancy. You're getting the polynomial part, the first part of something which has an infinite expansion, or something associated with sums of distances. In both of those cases, there's a very simple analytic expression for the full discrepancy. And in using these in the sums of distances and the Stolarski invariance principle, you can get an estimate of the worst case error for this particular Sobolev space. And here, the ones that actually do best are the ones that come from maximizing the sum of distances, which is the blue ones down here. But the minimum energy points are, in fact, virtually hidden underneath those, whereas the generalized spiral points are slightly better. I should emphasize here that these are not supposed to be decaying. I have scaled these by n to the 3/4, and it's s over 2, so s is 3/2 is the appropriate power. So what we would expect would be to see a constant here. Right? And so we're only doing differences in the constant for the right decay power. And so one of the things to note is there's actually very little difference. I mean, this is a scale of 0.89, 0.9, 0.91 in that coefficient of the leading power in terms of the decay. And so between the generalized spiral and the minimum energy or the maximum distances. With the worst case error, the actual spherical designs are not going down as well because they don't necessarily have the same guess constant, but they're still heading towards a constant. The reason they don't go out as far is these ones here use order t squared on 2 points, where these ones here were done with order t squared points, so they go a bit further. Okay, so some just sort of summary points from a particular point of view. We've got numerical designs this changes all the time as things gently run in the background, but up to degree 155 or symmetry up to degree 230-odd, they have t squared on 2 order points. If you have some extra degrees of freedom, you can use it to satisfy other things. One of our aims was not to have to go through all the work of getting these exact spherical designs, but to try and find something which we could generate very quickly, but was still close to a spherical design. So still could be used as equal weight curvature rules and still have the appropriate decay in terms of the worst case error. So there's lots of issues, most of them sort of numerical. The proofs that they actually always exist for every t with the order t squared on 2 is not there yet. They are there. We at least are down to having things with the t order t squared, so that gradually improves. And the disadvantage is there's an optimization going on at each stage, which is expensive. But once you've got them, if anybody wants them, I'm happy to just provide you with some files or links to a web page where you can grab them all. And of course, there's various things. If we're also interested in multi-level schemes, And these things are not naturally nested in sense. As you go up with the degrees, the sets of points are not nested there. Oh, that was some references there. So I think I'll finish there. Thank all the organisers for all their tremendous work and be happy to take questions.